second case this morning is United States against Conliff. Counsel for the defense.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Captain Melissa Goforth-Koenig, and together with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Tellatocci, I represent the appellant in this case, Cadet Mark Conliff. Members of the court, in this case, appellant's pleas of guilty to the three specifications of housebreaking are improvident where the intended criminal offense upon entry, conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman, is a purely military offense. In the explanation section for housebreaking, criminal offense for the purpose of Article 130 is defined as any act or omission which is punishable by a court-martial, except an act or omission constituting a purely military offense. Conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman is a purely military offense. While this court has never ruled...
Counsel, is the president defining a substantive offense here? What is the president doing when he says that it doesn't apply to purely military offenses? Is he making substantive criminal law?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
Didn't we say in Ellis v. Jacob that he doesn't have that authority? That the president's authority under 36 to promulgate rules does not extend to questions of substantive criminal law. That's for the court.
Well, and I believe that the court actually has said that conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman is a purely military offense.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, does the president have that authority?
No, Your Honor.
He doesn't have that authority. So we can ignore what he says in the manual?
But the Congress approved the manual for court-martial. Congress wrote the manual for court-martial.
No, Congress didn't write the manual for court-martial. It's an executive document. Congress wrote the code. The manual is an executive order, or a collation of executive orders. It's a presidential document.
Well, it certainly would have been what service members were on notice of.
I'm sorry?
It certainly would have been the law that service members... It certainly would have been what service members were on notice of.
Yes. Go ahead.
While there is no law from this court directly on point, the manual...
Would the government have just charged absent the last clause there? Would that have been adequate?
If the government would have just charged housebreaking with the intent to commit the underlying offense...
Utilizing an imaging device to surreptitiously record?
And no, Your Honor, it would not have been sufficient, because at that time, the high-tech peeping was not against the law in the state of New York, nor is it against the federal law.
Voyeurism was not a federal crime at the time?
They certainly didn't charge it under a voyeurism statute. When Cadet Conliff was doing his providence inquiry...
Is not that a description of voyeurism?
Well, when Cadet Conliff was doing his providence inquiry, there was no discussion at all of voyeurism being against the law. The discussion of the crime...
That's a providence issue, but just as a charging matter, would that have been an adequate charge absent the conduct unbecoming?
There's no...
Putting aside whether the plea... Providence inquiry was adequate.
Well, there's no New York law stating that was against the law at that time. There's been no notice of any sort of law stating that that was against the law at that time.
And voyeurism was not a federal offense at the time?
And not to my knowledge, sir, no.
In how many states was the charged conduct an offense at the time it was committed?
Well, Your Honor, the appellant believes that is not what's relevant. What is relevant is that...
Well, I'll be glad to give you the opportunity to answer the questions you want to ask at any time you want me to do that, but I'd like you to answer my question, if you have an answer to that.
Sir, I'm not aware of how many states criminalized voyeurism at the time Cadet Conliff committed his acts in the state of New York. I do know that...
Were there states that criminalized that act at that time?
Yes, Your Honor, and those laws did not apply to Cadet Conliff at that time.
Do you have a case that stands for the proposition that the criminal offense for housebreaking has to be a criminal offense in the state where the act is committed?
No, Your Honor.
Do you have a principle of law that we should look to that is the case?
No, Your Honor.
Have you had an opportunity to look at any of the background of the manual for courts martial and where that language is derived from about purely military offense? That is, whether a purely military offense is an offense that can only be prosecuted in military courts, or whether it refers to offenses that may or may not be prosecuted in military courts. Where do we look to find what that phrase, purely military offense, means?
Your Honor, there are a couple of references made in the manual for court-martial. In Rule of Court-Martial 201, it said purely military offenses are those crimes over which the courts-martial have exclusive jurisdiction. And in the analysis, it states that military offenses are those such as unauthorized absence, disrespect, and disobedience, which have no analog in civilian criminal law, which would be also the case with conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. There's also a mention made in the manual for court-martial for...
Why is that the case? Why couldn't that be interpreted as saying only those offenses which cannot be prosecuted in civilian courts are purely military offenses? After all, I'm not aware of anyone who can be prosecuted for unauthorized absence in a civilian court.
Well, and that's true. And also, too, they can't be prosecuted for conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman in a civilian court.
Can they be prosecuted for the conduct that's denounced in a charge under conduct unbecoming an officer?
Sometimes. And we see a whole host of case law, Parker v. Levy, U.S. v. Howe, U.S. v. Wilby, where the courts are saying that the underlying conduct of conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman may be criminal or it may not be criminal. What they're actually punishing for under Article 133 is somebody's failure to behave as an officer and a gentleman.
Have you looked at any of the drafting analysis of the manual for courts martial to see where the phrase purely military offense has been interpreted? I didn't notice it cited in the briefs in this case.
I haven't focused on the drafting analysis. I've read a lot of the case law, though, where they've talked about, where they've analyzed, what is a purely military offense and how we get to where we basically say something is a purely military offense.
And which case stands for the proposition that a purely military offense only applies or does not apply to offenses that are capable of being prosecuted in civilian courts?
I'm sorry, can you repeat
that? In other words, this offense that we're talking about here, based on your answer about state courts, is an offense that could have been prosecuted in civilian courts in the United States. Your point is that it couldn't be prosecuted in New York, but other civilian courts did have under their state jurisdiction this offense. So if this is an offense that could be prosecuted in civilian courts, what tells us that it is not then a purely military offense, is or is not a purely military offense, if it can be prosecuted and could be prosecuted in state courts?
Well, in looking into whether or not it is a purely military offense, I mean, Cadet Conliff's actions at that time in that place, doing that particular thing would not have been criminal.
It would have been criminal in some states, though, wouldn't it? It could have been prosecuted in some civilian courts.
Yes, Your Honor, but the only reason that Cadet Conliff could be prosecuted for what he did at that time in that place was because of the fact that he was a service member.
Well, I mean, I thought that your argument was that the reason that, irrespective of whether or not housebreaking itself is a purely military offense, which I think you would agree it's not, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That this is a purely military offense because of the way it was charged, and it was charged as an Article 133 offense, and that is a purely military offense.
Yes, Your Honor. And that it was a charging decision that the government made.
Okay. Are you familiar with the Federal Assimilative Crimes Act?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does that tell us anything about whether or not voyeurism or the peeping Tom, or however you want to describe what the appellant is alleged to have done or did or pled guilty to doing, whether it had to be a crime in the state where he was when the act occurred?
Well, they certainly didn't charge him under 134 with the assimilation.
I understand that. I understand that, but I mean, would you agree that there's still a question about lesser included offense? Right?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, he would not be guilty of a lesser included offense because the military judge never covered the elements of service discrediting or conduct prejudicial to order and discipline in the province.
Are those elements of an Article 134 Clause 3 offense?
Well, No, Your Honor.
And does the federal or state statute have to be defined in the charge for an Article 134 Clause 3 offense?
It should be defined in the charge to put the accused on notice. But also, it definitely should be discussed in the Providence inquiry, and there certainly wasn't anything discussed. When the Moultrie judge went through the Providence inquiry portion for housebreaking, the offense that they discussed that Cadet Conliff had the intent to commit when he entered the structure was conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. And there was never a discussion of service discrediting or conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline with the accused.
The statute that we're dealing with was part of the Uniform Code of Military Justice enacted in 1950 and became effective with the Manual for Courts Martial, adoption of the Manual for Courts Martial, and has been pointed out in some of the discussion here today, the Manual for Courts Martial's provisions on substantive offenses are not binding on this court. Are they nonetheless provisions that we look to for guidance in how to interpret a statute?
Certainly, yes, sir.
And do we look to the drafter's analysis of the 1951 manual as for guidance in how to interpret the statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's the 1951 manual drafter's analysis specifically talks about this case. It has a specific provision in the discussion of paragraph 209, and there's a discussion of a previous Board of Review decision which held, just as you would like to have held in this case, that the offense in civilian life has to be an offense at the particular location in which the offense is charged. And this is what the drafters say. This decision is submitted represented a misconstruction of the definition of criminal offense. The board assumes since a criminal offense for the purpose of housebreaking could not be a purely military nature, it had necessarily to be of a civil nature at the time and place of the act in order to constitute a criminal offense at all. That's the point you're making. But the drafter said, that's incorrect. There is no need to look further and determine whether the act is an offense of a civil nature at the locus delicti, a fact which is wholly immaterial. That's contrary to your position. This is the drafter's analysis of the 1951 manual that implemented the UCMJ. What bearing does that have on our decision today?
Does that help or hurt your argument to start?
I'm not sure at this point.
You'll have an opportunity to consult with your co-counsel and perhaps direct address that during rebuttal.
Hey,
now, the government's is arguing in its brief that the charge is reference to conduct unbecoming is not the underlying offense, but rather it's just I'll let them make their own argument, but is in some manner descriptive or extra, right? Unnecessary, because the underlying offense is the voyeurism, and the charge is alerting folks that this is also conduct unbecoming in addition to voyeurism. What is your response to that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that it was clear during the Providence inquiry that everybody's understanding was that the offense that they were discussing, that was the underlying offense intended upon entry, was in fact conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. It was not any sort of voyeurism. It was no high-tech peeping. It was no offense like that. The actual conduct, the actual offense that the military judge read the elements for and that was discussed with the appellant in this case at that time was conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman.
Well, would voyeurism or high-tech peep, could voyeurism or high-tech peeping as opposed to low-tech peeping be conduct unbecoming?
Well, it certainly could, Your Honor. Conduct unbecoming can be illegal conduct or not illegal.
Do you agree
conduct
with the government that the conduct unbecoming is surplusage? The government asserts that.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Is it an element of the offense?
The conduct unbecoming, is it an element of the offense?
Yes.
It is the intended offense that is requiring for, required, for the attend, for, required for the offense.
What are the elements of an offense under 133?
Under 133, yeah. It's that the servicemen were engaged in conduct, and that conduct was conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman.
Right.
I mean, so if your argument is that the reason that the housebreaking offense fails is because conduct unbecoming an officer is a purely military offense, then the question with respect to the locus of the offense and whether something is a crime there or someplace else, it doesn't matter to your argument, or does it?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. I mean, if what you're focusing on, and I thought that this was the focus of your argument, is that the reason that appellant's providency inquiry is inadequate here is because an Article 133 offense is a purely military offense.
Yes,
do I have that part right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's a purely military offense because of the conduct unbecoming an officer, and that can only apply in a military context.
Well, it can only apply in a military context, and also, too, the accused status as a service member is an element of the offense.
So if that's your argument, and I may have, and I was asking you questions about state law for another reason, but does it matter, if that's your argument, whether voyeurism is or is not a standalone crime in the place where he was doing this?
No, Your Honor, because he wasn't charged with that. That was not the intended offense upon entry for the housebreaking. Also, too, I think it's important to note that in 1983, the Court of Military Appeals came out with a series of cases that kind of gave us a framework as to how to analyze whether or not something is a purely military offense. And in 1983, in about a period of a four-month period of time, the court issued three opinions, McDowe, Marsh, and McGinnis. And those three opinions taken together established that basically conduct unbecoming an officer is a purely military offense. The court in McDowe said that they had drawn a distinction between purely military offenses and other offenses which weren't purely military. And they said that any offense to which they disputed factual issues about the accused status as a service member must be decided by the trier of fact is a purely military offense. And then the court in U.S. v. Marsh came back, and it drew from the McDowe decision, and it said that it said basically for Article 86, it said that that was a purely military offense because that language at the very beginning of Article 86 says that it applies to members of the armed forces. And because of that, it was a purely military offense. In conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman, we see the same thing. We have, you know, the language before the article for conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman says that it applies only to officers, cadets, and midshipmen. So it only applies to a special class of service members. And I see that my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Captain Adam Kazin. Along with Colonel Denise Lynn, I represent the United States in this matter. The central issue in this case is what constitutes a purely military offense for purposes of the underlying intended offense and housebreaking charge under Article 130. Specifically, is there an absolute prohibition against using an Article 133 offense as the intended criminal offense for all cases and for all time? No such per se rule exists now.
Are you arguing that was the underlying offense here?
That the Article 133 was, yes, an article, the violation of Article
133. Voyeurism wasn't the underlying offense. It was conduct unbecoming.
Well, it was a charge of conduct unbecoming punishing an act of video voyeurism, Your Honor.
Let me try that again. What was the underlying offense?
The underlying offense was surreptitiously videotaping women in various stages of undress, conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. It's the entire offense that we're looking at as opposed to any particular element or provision.
I misread your brief to suggest that the underlying offense was voyeurism. You're saying the underlying offense was conduct unbecoming an officer.
It was voyeurism, Your Honor, as punished under Article 133.
Did you not say in your brief that the Article 133 language was surplusage?
Actually, that was language from the Army Court of Criminal Appeals' decision. Okay. I don't believe we specifically said that.
Okay, you didn't say that. The ACCA said that.
So you're saying it could not be struck. There's no LIO opportunity here.
Well, there is an LIO opportunity, Your Honor. The argument that appellant made in their brief was that an unlawful entry could not be a possible LIO. Now, whether or not...
Sounds like you're saying this is essential language, though. This person could not have been convicted for utilizing an imaging device to surreptitiously record the images that fill in the blank.
No, Your Honor, because it could have been also punished under Clauses 1 or 2 of Article 134. The vehicle for punishing this misconduct...
As it's currently, as the specification is currently drafted?
As the specification is currently drafted, because it is possible to have a Clause 2 lesser-included offense for the video voyeurism, or just an Article 133 offense under the Cherry-Curry line of cases where the service discrediting nature of a Clause 2 offense is a lesser service discrediting of a conduct unbecoming. But we're not saying that...
In light of Medina? And you still take that position in light of this Court's decision last term in Medina?
Yes, Your Honor, actually we do. Although, because in that case it was an issue of notice. And I don't think the Medina thing, so when you discuss service discrediting for purposes of, when someone says they've discredited themselves as an officer, that's a higher level of discredit than it is for a level of discredit for a Clause 2 offense under Article 134.
So you're essentially arguing that conduct unbecoming is not a purely military offense?
It is not necessarily a purely military offense, Your Honor. What we're not saying is there's no per se
rule. How can a civilian commit conduct unbecoming an officer?
They can't necessarily commit the second element of the offense, Your Honor, but when we look at a purely military offense, just taking the word purely, we're looking at the offense as a whole, which includes both the first and second element.
You have to have both elements, though?
You do indeed, Your Honor, but the question
is... How does a civilian commit conduct unbecoming while doing voyeurism?
They cannot, Your Honor.
But you just told us that's the charge here.
Yes, Your Honor, but they can commit voyeurism they can be punished for video voyeurism or voyeurism.
But you said that's not the charge here. We've invited you to say that and you've repeatedly declined to do so.
Well, and there would be nothing, assuming that there was a federal law or a state law in the locus that would have prohibited you from charging this appellant under Article 134, Clause 3.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor, if there was a federal or state statute on point at the time of the offense,
right.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. We could have used Clause 3. However,
Or if you'd chosen to, you could have charged it under Clause 1 or Clause 2.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And the government chose not to do that.
That is correct, Your Honor. The government chose to charge it as video voyeurism, conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. And the Army Corps is saying that last bit of is the conduct unbecoming an officer and gentleman is surplusage. Whether it is or not is not really relevant to the question of whether or not Article 133 is a purely military offense, which is the essential issue before the court, as opposed to whether or not...
Why isn't it relevant? If it's surplusage, then it's surplusage, but if it's an essential element of the offense, again, we're back to the same issue. How can a civilian engage in conduct unbecoming an officer?
Well, Your Honor, because it's not whether or not he committed the underlying offense of conduct unbecoming an officer, it's what his intent was at the time he committed an offense. The provision of paragraph 56C3 is simply limiting the types of offenses a person can intend to commit, narrowing down what he calls purely military offenses. Now, where this language comes from, a question that got asked, if we trace it back to the 1927 Army Manual for Court-Martial, it just sort of appears there without a specific definition. And when I say it appears there is because when Article 493 was passed in 1920, just said housebreaking is an offense, the original Army Manual for Court-Martial did not have that provision in there about not being able to have the intended criminal offense being a purely military offense. It referenced the D.C. Statutes for housebreaking. In 1927, it simply appeared there that this definition of criminal offenses, all offenses under the code that are not punishable, that are not purely military offenses, and it remained that way up until 1950, when it was adopted into the Manual for Court-Martial and on into the current form. But there's really no specific definition of what is a purely military offense.
Well, counsel, let's focus on that. First of all, with respect to the statute itself, it doesn't reference purely military offense. But the government is not taking the position that the statute should be interpreted to apply to any criminal offense. Is that correct? In other words, you're agreeing that the president's reference to purely military offense is binding, what, either as a proper interpretation of the statute at the time it was enacted, or as a matter of presidential prosecutorial discretion that only those would be?
Probably more the latter, Your Honor.
Okay. So it's binding. That is, the government's not contesting that the phrase purely military offense is binding.
It's certainly binding on the government, Your Honor.
Okay. So at the time that the UCMJ was adopted, according to the drafter's analysis from which I quoted earlier, there was one Board of Review decision. And the Board of Review decision that is discussed in the drafter's analysis is contrary to the position you're taking today. It's precisely the position that the defense is taking, that the offense in civilian life has to be an offense at the place at which the charged offense is committed. So if that was the one decision that was in effect at the time that the UCMJ was adopted, why shouldn't we follow that decision as opposed to worrying about the drafter's analysis, which was written after the code was adopted?
Well, Your Honor, for one thing, the last 50 years, the nature of Article 133 and 134 offenses have certainly broadened the amount of types of misconduct, the nature of misconduct that's punishable under Article 133 and 134. For example, this court has affirmed convictions under Article 133 for child pornography. Certainly wouldn't be considered a purely military offense, even though it may or may not be directly.
Are you arguing that those offenses didn't exist at the time the manual was adopted? The analysis talks about the offense of joyriding and the question of whether joyriding is or is not an offense. Now, that's something that's not a purely military offense in the sense of being only prosecuted in military courts, but the point the Board of Review was making there was joyriding wasn't an offense in the state in which the individual was charged, and therefore he couldn't be prosecuted for housebreaking.
Well, and I would say that the question is whether or not it's a purely military offense may not be necessary, and I'd have to look at that Board of Review decision, Your Honor. I would confess that in looking through the manual for court-martial discussion, I did not find that particular provision. There are references to purely military offenses in the 1951 manual for court-martial, but it references often unauthorized absence, or it references sleeping on duty. These types of offenses that are truly a purely military nature because they have no civilian analog. Now, while conduct on becoming an officer doesn't have a civilian analog in and of itself, the type of misconduct that it is punishing might. And so it requires a judicial analysis on more of a case-by-case basis as opposed to a per se rule. Again, Article 134, indecent assault, prior to the Article 120 changes, was punished housebreaking with intent to commit indecent assault. Certainly that would not be considered a purely military offense, even though conduct prejudicial to good order discipline and conduct that is service discrediting is in no way, shape, or form punishable in the civilian world.
But the argument that the defense is making is that that Article 134 offense of indecent assault cannot be prosecuted in the military unless there's proof of either Clause 1 or Clause 2, service discrediting conduct, or conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline, so that there is a purely military component that doesn't exist in civilian society.
Correct, Your Honor. However, this court has, in fact, affirmed, and this court and courts below have affirmed convictions of housebreaking with intent to commit indecent assault. It was no more a purely military offense then than it is now. And again, the similarity between the service discrediting nature.
In any of those cases, did we discuss this particular issue?
We did not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
However,
Can you clarify? I think you answered, you stated this with respect to a question from Judge Ryan, but can you just repeat it for those of us who are a little slow? Was the last clause essential to the charge? Could the government have charged this without reference to conduct unbecoming?
Yes, Your Honor, they could have.
Thank you.
As what?
As housebreaking with intent to peep in violation of Article 134.
Well, is that a sentence and answer?
No, Your Honor.
Oh. I don't. Well, in other words, you're just charged. Oh.
I believe it would be 1 year, so it would actually decrease that. But it wouldn't change the maximum punishment, Your Honor, because the intended criminal offense is not, under housebreaking, is not what sets the maximum penalty.
Okay. Let me ask you the question that Judge Baker asked you, but in a slightly different way. Under what theory could surreptitiously recording women in states of undress be prosecuted under the UCMJ?
At the time of the accused offense, it would have been either Clause 1 or 2 of Article 134 UCMJ or under Article 133 UCMJ. As as an intended criminal offense. Again, we're looking
so are you conceding that there was no state law under the Federal Assimilative Crimes Act or any federal law that it could have been charged under Clause 3?
Yes, sir. The state law that New York does now have a state law, it was passed a few months after appellant's offenses, so it didn't apply there. The federal video voyeurism statute was passed in 2004.
Okay, well, and this is assuming that we don't agree with you, and I'm not saying that myself or anyone else doesn't agree with you, but assuming that we did not agree with you that an Article 133 offense would be a non-military, anything other than a purely military offense for purposes of the housebreaking, how does Clause 1 or Clause 2 of Article 134 get you in any better of a place?
It doesn't, Your Honor. We're not saying that we can use those for these purposes. What I was doing was drawing an analogy between Article 133 and 134. If this court were to determine that appellant was not provident to, or that somehow the Article 130 housebreaking charge was defective in some way, the lesser included offense that we would then be looking at is unlawful entry under Article 134.
Okay, and then the question arises about the specification, which didn't have the operative language for Clause 1 or Clause 2.
Well, and that's where we get into Medina and lesser-included offenses. And we'll start with the fact that in Medina, this Court stated, and I'm sort of moving on to a sub-issue here, but that pages 26 to 27 in Medina, that an accused must have fair notice of the lesser-included offenses that might be affirmed later on down the road under Article 59 UCMJ. Specifically, the Court said that an accused must know to what offenses he's pleading guilty. And under Article 134, given its structure and elements, an accused must also know under what clause he is pleading guilty. It is accomplished either through advice by the military judge or through operation of the lesser-included offense doctrine. We start with the first point being that unlawful entry is a delineated lesser-included offense in the manual for court-martial. It's right there in paragraph 56D1. So there you have at least very specific notice to any accused charged under Article 130 that a lesser-included offense of unlawful entry is available.
Do you have a case from the Supreme Court or from any federal circuit or from this court, that stands for the proposition that something being listed as a lesser-included offense in an analysis to a statute is sufficient notice, even if the elements for purposes of the Schmuck test are not lesser-included offense, would not ordinarily be considered a lesser-included offense under the Schmuck test?
Not standing alone, Your Honor, the fact that it's simply delineated is one point of notice, the other being that the military judge specifically told him that unlawful entry would be a lesser-included offense if the element of his intended criminal offense was not available. The judge said to him, and this is at page 251 of the record, he said that if he was not provident to the element of intending to secretly videotape the women, he would be guilty of the lesser-included offense of unlawful entry. Now, the military judge did discuss service discrediting conduct. He had to discuss it in the context of service discrediting for an officer. But as this court said in the the Cherokee case, this is back in 2000, citing Harwood, that the nature of the service discrediting for Article 133 is a greater level of discredit than for Clause 2 of Article 134. So when the accused said that his actions were morally reprehensible, to say the least, that they brought discredit upon himself as well as the army he represents, he certainly established both a factual predicate and an actual predicate for that Clause 2 offense. So if this court were to deem that the 130 offense was no good, it could certainly affirm a lesser-included offense or send back to the Army Court to affirm a lesser-included offense of unlawful entry. Medina does not prohibit the court from doing that.
And your argument there would be that the purely military offense language would not be applicable when we're dealing with the unlawful entry?
Correct, Your Honor. If we moved into unlawful entry, there's no it's a lesser-included offense, and there's no prohibition against purely military offenses. Just a quick point that I'd like to make. One is regarding the standard of review. The government has briefed sort of a bifurcated standard of review. There are two questions here. One is that per se rule that is Article 133 a purely military offense, which would prohibit any accused in any court-martial from being prosecuted for housebreaking with an intent to commit an Article 133 offense. If there's no per se rule, then the standard of review, and that's a de novo standard of review, we're talking about a question of law. If we're switching to whether or not appellant was provident to his offense, the standard of review should shift to a substantial basis in law and fact, because now we're talking about his specific case, the fact that he did not raise this issue, that he pled guilty, switches the standard of review over. And the government's position is that his intent to videotape his victims, undressing, was not a purely military offense, and that the military judge properly accepted his pleas. That would mean that there are no substantial basis in law or fact for questioning those pleas. Subject to the court's questions.
One question. Can you point to any place in the record where the appellant specifically admitted to either the prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting elements of the lesser included offense?
I would point to page 256 and 270 of the record, Your Honor. That's where the military judge started discussing about why was it discrediting, why was it, and he didn't say, he used the magic language purely prejudicial good order, discipline, and service discrediting conduct, but he was talking about the service discrediting nature.
Well, he's talking about conduct unbecoming, however.
Correct, Your Honor. And the conduct unbecoming.
That wasn't the question, not where did he admit to conduct unbecoming. It was where did he admit to discredit, et cetera.
Well, the military judge had to discuss the conduct unbecoming element, that his conduct to videotaping was unbecoming an officer and a gentleman, when he was discussing the Article 130 housebreaking charge. When he was discussing that, after having previously told him about the lesser included offense, and given that Article 134, unlawful entry, is listed in the code as a lesser-included offense, we combine those three things together under Medina to see whether or not he was on fair notice, that's the term Medina used, fair notice of the lesser-included offense. And we would say he is on fair notice of it, given those three things.
I guess my question is related, but I have a slightly different question, which is where from the providency inquiry can we be certain that he understood he was subjecting himself to liability under Clause 2 of Article 134?
The record of page 251, Your Honor, where the military judge specifically stated that he would not be guilty of housebreaking, he would instead be guilty of the lesser included offense of unlawful entry. Panel is there, his attorney is there, there was no question about that, he understood that, and he said he understood that. And then you get into looking at the record as a whole, he was aware of the lesser included offense, and he also admitted to the factual predicate of service discrediting conduct.
Where did he admit to the service discrediting conduct? By saying it was conduct unbecoming?
Well, by saying.
Therefore, he was aware that he was pleading to all clauses of 134?
Well, he certainly understood he understood the lesser included offense of unlawful entry was there, and I'm using his words that he said he discredited upon himself as a cadet, that's one, as well as the army he represents. That's page 256 and 270 of the record. And that would seem to indicate, when he says discredit upon the Army, would certainly qualify for service discrediting conduct. It's a service Army, and he admitted that he discredited it.
Well, my recollection could be wrong, but I thought that in Medina that there was similar language that the appellant made during his providency inquiry. But in that case, the problem was the elements of a Clause 1 or a Clause 2 Article 134 offense were never explicitly defined by the military judge or admitted to by the appellant.
Well, there was a couple. First, in Medina, Your Honor, this court had noted that not all Clause 1 and 2, not all Clause 3 charges are necessarily have a lesser included offense of a Clause 1 or 2 offense. It depends on the nature of how it's charged. Given how this was charged, and given that unlawful entry, and this was only applying to Clause 3 of Article 134, the court left aside the Foster line of cases that said that all enumerated offenses necessarily have an element of prejudice to good order, discipline, and service discrediting, and therefore Article 134 offenses can continue to be lesser included offenses of clauses of enumerated offenses under the code without that language being added in there. The Foster line of cases was not touched. I still have run over my time if I didn't finish
answering. Please finish the answer to Judge Ryan's question.
Medina didn't really speak to whether or not a lesser included offense can still, a clause one or two offense can still be a lesser included offense of an enumerated. We assume Foster is still good law. But given also the nature of the way it was charged, specifically with that conduct unbecoming an officer and gentleman language in it, the government certainly pled it in such a way as to put the accused on notice of service discrediting conduct. And as I said, this court has previously stated that the discrediting nature of conduct on becoming an officer as a higher discrediting nature than that of Clause 2 of Article 134. Therefore, you have all of the things that you need under Medina to affirm a lesser-included offense of unlawful entry should the court deem the specifications defective.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, the appellant is not guilty of the lesser included offense of unlawful entry. During the Providence inquiry, the appellant did say during the appellant did say that his conduct discredited him as a cadet, brought discredit upon himself as a cadet and the Army he serves. But when he said that, it was nothing more than the ramblings of a layman. He had not had the definitions explained to him. And appellant disagrees with government that that the definition of service discrediting is the same, or would or the definition of conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman would suffice for being service discrediting.
Can you engage in conduct unbecoming without discrediting the service?
Yes, Your Honor, you can. To bring discredit upon the service, you'd actually have to...
So it wouldn't necessarily discredit the armed forces or the service to engage in conduct unbecoming, is what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. That they're two different things. Also, too, the government in this case made a charging decision. They charged appellant with housebreaking with the intent to commit conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. Therefore, the drafter's language do not hurt the appellant's argument.
Isn't military status a prerequisite to Article 134?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
Can a civilian be charged and tried under 134?
Yes, Your Honor.
A civilian can be charged under Article 134?
Yes, Your Honor. If a civilian is accompanying the armed forces overseas, they can be charged. Whereas conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman, not only does the accused have to be a service member, the accused actually has to belong to a certain class of service members, being commissioned officers, cadets, and midshipmen. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our argument on this case. The court will stand in recess until 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Thank counsel for both parties.
Court stands in recess until tomorrow at 3 p.m.